John Coffey is a professor at Columbia University Law School and a specialist in white-collar crime and securities law. He joins me now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Ken Lay's response to these charges has been that he wasn't trying to bail out of Enron and that he truly believed the company had a bright future, as we just heard.
Well, that's what he's saying, and the government does have a problem. This is not a slam dunk because Mr. Lay looks to some degree like a true believer who possibly irrationally thought that Enron had a bright future right to the end. What he will point to prove that is that he was buying Enron stock with his own money. The government's going to turn around, however, and focus on the period in August and September of 2001 when he was forced to make a large sale of Enron stock pursuant to a margin call. He had pledged his Enron stock as collateral for his other investments. And when that account went down, the brokers required him to sell off a large amount of stock. The government's going to call that insider trading. But it's not your traditional insider trading case because it wasn't a voluntary sale and because it was followed up by purchases whenever he had available funds. He did buy Enron stock. That's the backdrop, and he makes a number of statements to both securities analysts and employees saying that Enron has a bright future. Now, these are statements of opinion, and the law of fraud requires that before you could be convicted for a false statement of opinion, the government's got to prove not just that it was false, but that you subjectively did not believe it. And that may be the difficulty here.
And is that a plausible defense? It sounds like you're somewhat making a case for that.
Well, this is going to be an issue that only a jury can determine. And Mr. Lay's greatest problem is he's going to face a jury in Houston, Texas, where there's been an awful lot of pain and there's likely to be an awful lot of hostility. And most of the jury pool already knows the facts of this case very well because they've lived through it. Also, this will be a joint trial. It won't be Mr. Lay alone. It'll be Mr. Lay, Mr. Skilling, Mr. Causey. And I think jurors are going to have a great deal of difficulty believing that all the senior management of Enron is sitting there telling it that they didn't know and they believed the financial statements and they were all fooled by Mr. Fastow.
Well, how is the case against Ken Lay different from that against, say, Andrew Fastow or Jeffrey Skilling?
Well, in the very basic terms, Mr. Fastow is someone who was self-dealing. He was looting the company. He was getting money under the table. He had conflicts of interest. He was getting all kinds of payments that the rest of the officers didn't know about. It's much easier to prove a case against someone who is getting payments under the table, who is, in effect, stealing from the company, than someone who is just making confident statements and saying, I really believe this. Look, I relied upon Arthur Anderson for the financial statements, and they were one of the best accounting firms at the time in the world, and I relied on my law firm to investigate Sharon Watkins' allegations, and they told me there was no problem. So he's going to say, I relied upon my experts and my agents, and they all misled me. The problem is that if all the senior managers in one trial say that, it may not be credible to a jury that no one knew what was going on and what was the largest accounting failure that we've ever seen. The books of Enron were really grossly cooked.
Well, as you said, the Houston jurors might be expected to know quite a bit about this case already. What kind of a trial might he expect?
I think the fact that it's going to be a joint trial with each individual trying to make a different defense that he didn't know will put him in much more difficult position than if he was standing trial just by himself and the government had to prove that he had to know beyond a reasonable doubt. Here, everybody is going to be pointing fingers at someone else, and that reduces the credibility of the entire defense effort.
Way down the line, were he to be convicted, what kind of sentence are we talking about here? What could he face?
Well, that's the bizarre feature of this case. Last month, at the end of its term, the U.S. Supreme Court threw the American law of sentencing into total chaos. In a decision called Blakely versus Washington, they found it unconstitutional that a state was using a sentencing guideline system that put great weight on facts that were not found by the jury at the trial. And that's exactly how American federal sentencing guidelines work. Mr. Lay was facing an enormous sentence, 25 or 30 years, because of the huge financial loss that Enron's failure caused. But the jury never finds what the financial loss is. They're asked only to find that there was fraud or insider trading or conspiracy. And the sentencing judge then looked at the guidelines to determine what the financial loss was and geared the sentence to the total financial loss and consequences. Now, because the sentencing guideline system appears, at least at this point, to be invalid under this Supreme Court decision, what penalty he faces is totally, totally up in the air and appears to be a matter of judicial discretion.
John Coffey.
Final confusion.
John Coffey, thanks very much. John Coffey is a professor at Columbia University Law School.